This is Marketplace Weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. If you spent some time this week trying to figure out if you were affected by the Equifax breach, you're not alone. Roughly 143 million people's information may have been compromised. So we're going to spend some time on ID theft.
I'm Jeffrey Omura. I'm here in Manhattan. I'm an actor. I've lived here for 10 years. And about 5 years ago, I was the victim of identity theft.
It all started when he got an envelope in the mail from Best Buy. And there was a credit card inside in his name, which he hadn't applied for. So Amur calls him up.
And they said, well, someone applied for it at a Best Buy in New Jersey under your name with all of your information, including your Social Security number. And they bought a TV at the cash register in this Best Buy in New Jersey, which is strange since I live in Manhattan.
Amara says, whoa, convinces them it wasn't him. They agree to wipe it from his name.
I said, great, thank you.
And they say, go file a police report. And he tries, but his local precinct won't file the report because his money was reimbursed. No crime to solve.
And I was thinking, well, of course there's a crime to solve. The perpetrator's still on the loose out there, and there's probably video footage of him checking out at this Best Buy in New Jersey. But they didn't want to go down that route.
Fast forward a few weeks, and Jeffrey Amura's phone rings. It's Chase Bank, and they say someone tried to take $2,000 from his account, but didn't know the account number. So they turned him away.
I'm thinking this must be the same guy who opened up the credit card. And now I'm starting to get a little freaked out, because he knows way too much about me.
So he runs to his local Chase to sort things out, and while he's there, someone tries to withdraw money at 6 different branches.
On the 7th time, he changed his tactics, and he wrote a check to my name and was able to cash it and actually withdrew $2,000 from my checking account.
So Chase sorts it out, reimburses Amura, changes his various numbers.
All my money's safe so far.
A month and a half later, another phone call. You can see where this is going. This time, it's Verizon. They say his bill for his new account is due. Omura explains what's going on.
And they said, well, we can't close this account until you file a police report and send us that documentation so that we know that this was a crime. Otherwise, you will be held accountable for this $1,400 charge on this brand new Verizon account.
Yes. Remember the police report?
No, I don't have a police report because I tried to make a police report and the NYPD turned me away.
He goes back and a detective says they can't just give him a report. Once a report's filed, they're obligated to try to solve it.
Seems like a pretty good policy. In this particular situation, I didn't need them to solve the crime. I really just needed the paperwork so I could fax it into Verizon, close that account, and make sure I was not liable for this $1,400 charge.
The detective says, fine, we'll get a report, but we need to investigate first.
Probably about 2 months later, he finally calls me back and says, we've closed the case. We have not solved the case, but here's your police report.
He sends it to Verizon, gets his money back, and yes, it's over. Omura now has extra security on everything. His bank accounts, tax returns, no problem since. But if all this trouble can happen if someone nabs your Social Security number, why are those 9 numbers tied to everything?
Because big, bad, and in some cases lazy businesses hijacked it.
That's Neil O'Farrell, head of the Identity Theft Council. He says that since the U.S. doesn't have a national ID...
And because it was really the only universal individual identifier, particularly in the United States, it became quickly hijacked by the financial community as a way to determine who you are and therefore what your credit history is like.
But nowadays, we have data breach after data breach, which means your social may not be secret.
The financial industry particularly has always regarded identity theft as a cost of doing business.
New technology could be a game changer, from fingerprints to facial scans. Biometric technology sits in our pockets, on our phones. Hi, Apple, looking at you, and surrounds us every day.
I think the changes in the future will focus around stopping the thieves using stolen information less than stopping them from stealing it.
To talk about that, we have Brian Ichikawa on the show. He's a biometrics expert who works with businesses and governments. What's a better way to identify ourselves instead of using a social security number?
I'm sort of the school, like, well, the fact that we have that SSN out there being used everywhere, that's sort of life, right? And you know, we can change that identifier, but all we've done is change the identifier. I think we need to move sort of beyond that and say we need to protect the infrastructure as a whole.
Does having a conversation about using your fingerprint or retina scan or whatever it is that the conversation to have?
If we use a different identifier and then that gets compromised, then what? I mean, have we fixed anything? I don't think so.
When you work with a company or a government, what do you tell them to do differently?
There's a responsibility that corporations and government agencies have in protecting personal information. And at the minimum, all that data should be highly encrypted. Now, there's a layer of overhead, of cost, and that's probably the reason why it's not a ubiquitous practice. And so, you know, your data has been compromised, and it's out there already.
Well, so let's spin forward a few years. I mean, we're already seeing airlines and, say, the U.S. government pilot some different programs where you can use biometrics at check-in, or you can use your global entry card. Are we moving toward a world where biometrics are more incorporated into what we do for security purposes, or is that just as vulnerable?
If you can improve the way you authenticate yourself, if you can improve the way you say you can prove you are who you claim to be, that's going to help a lot. You know, I tell all my friends and family that whenever you have additional security features that are available to you, take advantage of them. Those are the little things that we as individuals can do to help make ourselves more secure.
Who pays for all this?
If a company has your information and they need to protect it, then they need to pay for the additional infrastructure associated with that. Now, how far do you carry that? For example, you know, let's say my bank wants to implement a additional security feature saying, you know, well, we can make this more secure by adding your fingerprint to this. Okay. Then who's going to pay for the fingerprint reader? So maybe right now that becomes an option. So me as an individual may say, I will pay for that fingerprint reader. The bank pays for the infrastructure to make that reader work in their system. So we both pay for that, right? And maybe if I'm a high-value customer, the bank goes, you know, we'll pay for that fingerprint reader because you have more assets, you're a higher-value customer, and we'll cover that one for you.
Does that risk exacerbating inequality where security becomes a luxury item?
Well, I would hope not. I mean, security and privacy are almost rights, right, in today's world. You cannot have to be rich in order to be able to afford higher degrees of security or privacy.
Brian Ichikawa, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.